daily Premier League action and reaction. This is Football Social Daily.
This is Football Social Daily, the only daily Premier League podcast, picking up off the back of a weekend of footballing carnage. Manchester City will have to wait a little bit longer for their Premier League title, courtesy of 3 points thrown away at the boot of a Sergio Aguero penalty miss. Manchester United look leggy, already ahead of their monster week of fixtures, although they did manage a win against Aston Villa to keep the vaguest glimmer of a Premier League title alive for now. And West Ham's European dreams took a knock as they lost to Everton. But all of that is on yesterday's Football Social Daily. Fergal, Ant and Jay covering off most of the events from across the weekend. If you want to catch up with the latest there, just spin back in the timeline, listen to that podcast. Because today, it's me, I'm Jim Salverson, Marley Anderson. How you doing, Marley?
Good morning. Yeah, not too bad.
And Imran Lahair as well from the United Hour podcast, one of the fine podcasts on the Sports Social Podcast Network. How are you doing, Imran?
Yeah, good. Cheers. How are you, mate?
I'm all right, Tar. So we're in the hot seats today. We're going to be talking Fulham versus Burnley with Scott Parker's last throw of the dice to avoid relegation, potentially. We're going to be talking summer transfers as well, as the window, although it's not quite open yet, it's certainly having a little bit of WD-40 applied to its hinges at the moment. And we're going to be kicking off with West Bromwich Albion down to the Championship and Big Sam losing his record of never having been relegated as he takes West Brom, the Boing Boing Baggies, back down the leagues at the hands of Arsenal. It was Arsenal 3, it was West Brom 1. The big story is obviously the relegation. Big Sam relegated for the first time in his career. It was always going to be a tough job. West Brom have looked pretty doomed since pretty early on in the season. So does Sam Allardyce, Marley, and this is going to be tough for you, deserve any credit for the job he has done at West Brom? Because there were a few decent results along the way.
Jim, what do you think I'm going to say?
I don't think you're a big fan of Sam Allardyce and his work.
100%, absolutely right. Basically, he's come in and he's not saved them. And it's as cut and dried as that. I think they have improved slightly. But I don't think you could say Bilic wouldn't have got them to where they are now. I think they'd have finished pretty much the same place. Same sort of points tally and what have you. I think when Bilic was sacked, it was harsh because it would come off the back of their best result of the season so far, 1-1 at Man City. Despite, I mean, yes, Man City weren't the beast they are now, but still, it's a hell of a result for West Brom. And he's come in, and I've not liked how he's been speaking about the players, about the squad.
It's never his fault, is it? Always deflection. It's always the players or the fans or the referee or something. It's never the buck stops with Big Sam.
Yeah, 100%. I think when they lose, he's like, I think it was going back 5 or 6 weeks now, he said at some point the penny has to drop for the players. And like, to a point, yes, but also you, Monday to Friday, have to make that penny drop. You meant to be a defensive genius, this amazing defensive manager who doesn't concede many, makes teams solid, all the other cliches you want to roll out without doing any research into what Big Sam actually does when he comes to a club. And it hasn't worked. And we see him, having this never been relegated tag. Number one, that's probably the most pathetic sort of highlight anybody could ever have. Oh, I've never been relegated. Oh, fair play to you, mate. Christ. And then the second time,
never won anything either, has he?
Exactly.
I think he might have won. Didn't he win the division with Preston? Might have got that mixed up.
Way back in. Oh no, was that Moyes? Are you thinking of Moyes?
Oh, I might be actually. I might be anyway, getting confused.
All the same, aren't they? When they've been going this long,
peas in a pod.
Yeah. It's just wound me up the way he goes about things. And even I think even last night he was talking about figures. Are you going to be there next season? Well, if the figures haven't been sorted, I'm basically saying, I want a payday to stay, and I want, acting as if like he's the man to get them back up. And, I think he's never been relegated until now. And I think if you go back over the sort of the jobs he's done and the great escapes, his so-called great escapes that he's pulled off, I think it's the football has now moved on to a level in general where it's much better. And we've been saying for years, you know, football's leaving these managers behind. Allardyce, Pardew, Pulis, examples. And I think now we've hit a point where everyone's moved on enough to leave him as the 19th best team in a league when he comes in. And he's got that arrogance and confidence to say, yeah, I can still do it. But you don't know you can't do something until you get in there and you think, oh, Christ, this is harder than I thought it was going to be. Because he's came into West Brom and, you know, 6-7 weeks in, he's saying, bloody hell, they can't defend. It's like, well, you should have known that from the first 10 games when they were, you know, struggling along and losing games every week. So it's not like he didn't know what he was signing up for. He had a decent January, brought in some all right signings, but it was too little too late, and I'm quite glad to see the back of him. Albeit not West Brom per se. I don't have a big issue with West Brom. It's just Allardyce and that quick fix mentality of, yeah, he'll sort us out is something that I'm happy to see go, to be honest.
I stand corrected on Sam Allardyce has never won anything, by the way. In 1991, he won the League of Ireland First Division with Limerick. So quite a pedigree there for Big Sam.
And he won the third division with Notts County, apparently.
Oh, there we go. There we go.
And he also won national champion of gravy drinking. So
a bulging trophy cabinet. I mean, Imran, myself and Marley were slightly poisoned against Sam Allardyce because he's been at our clubs and we've seen what he does firsthand. As a Manchester United fan, he hasn't been in Manchester United's dugout yet, of course. There is still plenty of time.
There's always time. Yeah.
I mean, do you think he gets a bit of a rough ride in terms of having this stamp as a bit of a footballing dinosaur and playing this negative, ugly football? Or do you think actually we are in a situation now which West Brom have found out that style of football has become outdated and it's not enough to save your Premier League status nowadays?
It's difficult because, I mean, he didn't have a full season with West Brom this year, and no one can say what would have happened if he had a full season with West Brom. I think on Match of the Day yesterday, they had a start-up where I think he's got 1.5 averaging points in the last however many games, 10 games, 15 games, and that would put them 12th in the league. So right. I don't know if you can extrapolate that or put it over a whole season. Maybe they stay up. But I would go with you guys in that it's probably just passed him by now. Got to have a bit more from your manager now. And I think maybe, yeah, his time has just gone. It'd be interesting to see if he hangs around, though, if he can bring them back up next year. If he stays, I'm not sure he will, to be honest with you. But if he does, then that would be interesting whether he can keep them coming back. But yeah, I'll go with you guys on Big Sam. I've never had that first-hand experience, but every club he managed doesn't really seem to like him, so there must be a reason. Mm. Apart from Bolton fans. But then Bolton fans are easy to please, maybe.
I mean, is it a case of less to do with Big Sam, more to do with the personnel at West Brom? Because when you look at that West Brom team, Imran, is there anyone there that you can see, for example, getting poached off by another Premier League club as they go down to the Championship? Or is it a case of actually those players just maybe aren't good enough to compete in the top flight?
I would go with that as well. The players probably aren't good enough. I think you've got Johnston in net. Probably he could get a Premiership move. And then Pereira is the only other one you'd think. Conor Gallagher, decent, but he's a Chelsea player and probably will get another Premiership loan next season. Other than that, I can't see them really, anyone else going in for any of their players. But it will set them up for the Championship quite well. I mean, they've got someone like Carlan Grant, who's not really done much in the Premiership, but we know he can score goals in the Championship as he did at Huddersfield. You know, quite a poor Huddersfield team as well, and he put in goals for them. So players like that, Robson Kanu, you'd think they'd have quite a lot to do well next season in the Championship. But yeah, probably a step too far in the Premiership.
As Marley said, we don't know whether Big Sam's going to be there in the long term, whether he's going to try and bring them back up to the Premiership from the Championship. That quote that you were talking about, Marley, mentioning figures, was, it would depend on what is decided when figures are set. At the moment, I have no idea what the figures are or aren't. I mean, we've no idea whether he's talking about salary, whether he's talking about transfer budgets. It's really unclear, but it's completely not. If you're a West Brom fan, that's not what you want to hear from a potential manager going
into
the season.
It's weird, isn't it, that?
Yeah,
for a manager to talk about figures that openly is not what fans want to hear.
It's fine not committing at this stage, isn't it? It's fine going, well, we just need to take some time, we need to talk to the board, we need to set aspirations, saying that kind of thing. But breaking it down and being so blunt with it and going, it's about money. And it doesn't matter whether that's money is about investment in the playing squad, like I say, or money going into his back pocket. If you're a fan, it's not what you want to hear, is it?
Exactly. I mean, how much more money does he need? I'm sure, after, when he left Everton, I'm sure he said he retired. I'm sure he said, that's it, I'm not coming back. And then he's been, how many jobs has he had since Everton? He's had at least two, hasn't he? So, I don't know. He's just not a likeable guy. And he's quite comfortable in his own sort of way. Like, he's not bothered that no one likes him. But also, you know, it's no real surprise that, you know, fans aren't going to take to things like that. If you're an openly quite mercenary about you want paying to do this because, you know, you're lucky to have him. And it shouldn't be a surprise when people go, well, are you worth it? Because you've just got us relegated. So there's no real, you know, no real guarantee that you're going to come back. And there's a lot of managers that would take West Brom because they're a stable club. You know, they've got the parachute payments coming in. They go down and up pretty much every season. So you can almost guarantee they'll be successful next year as long as they get the manager sorted out. They've got the basis of a good squad. They'll probably sell Pereira, might sell Johnston, and then they'll sign some players and come back up probably. So it's all about just getting the manager.
But who, if for Big Sam, what would be next? I can't see him get, who would take him in the Premiership? I think that lure of never been relegated is now gone. He's 66 now. What is his next job if he doesn't stick around?
I think he's done now, isn't he? He's got to be done now, hasn't he? Got to be.
There'll always be a team that has an interest in him when it gets to just before Christmas and they're staring relegation in the face and they have to abandon the free-flowing football that's taken them up from the Championship and go, we need something more solid. We need something that's going to keep us in the Championship. There'll always be a club that takes a punt on him. And I think it's just a question of whether he wants to take that step back and remove himself, or whether there'll be that temptation of that paycheck and that retaining your Premier League status bonus that gets offered, whether he wants to come back in or not.
I can't see it really. I mean, West Brom seemed, it was like their last hope, throw the dice was Big Sam. And it, like we said, I feel like football's moved on. You've got people like Potter and Hasenhüttl, they're the kind of manager you have at the bottom end of the table-ish. Is Big Sam the guy you want? I don't know. I can't see it anymore. I think, and plus, Championship clubs, you won't get, like Mar said, you won't get a better one than West Brom next season, really, in terms of a attractive job. So yeah, that's one of the reasons why I can see him staying, is just that I can't see where the next job comes from afterwards.
Let's talk about the game itself, because for Arsenal fans, it was a rare glimpse of Arsenal looking half decent. And the first goal came from what I think gives a lot of Arsenal fans hope at the moment, two really promising young talents who could be the future of the club. And we've talked about how Arsenal need to redevelop their team and how they need to change next season. But ultimately, hanging on to these young players is probably, for me, more important than marquee signings and big names. Would you agree with that, Marley?
Yeah, I'd probably go with that. I think, you know, they were bright yesterday. West Brom made them look bright. They were awful, but you look at Saka and Smith Rowe, pretty much dominated the game. I think I lost count of how many times Saka got in completely free down that left hand side. It was just baffling how much space he had all the time. But yeah, he looks obviously a top player, and that's where Arsenal's future could come from. You know, I think a lot of people criticise when they give Willian a 3-year deal, and rightly so. And David Luiz, a lot of people didn't like that, because they're at the other end of the career where they possibly are looking out for the money a little bit more. You look at Smith Rowe, he just wants to be in that team. He wants to be the number 10 at Arsenal. He's been there since, I don't know how long he's been there, probably, you know, going back to when he was 14, 15, but sort of maximum. So he's just trying to get into that team. He's hungry, he's talented. Same with Saka. He's had his first sort of real first choice season this season. He's done pretty well. He's scored goals. He's turned in performances. He's got himself in the England team. He's hoping to go to the Euros in the summer. And that's not beyond the question with his versatility and things like that. So I think that is where Arsenal have to build. I think the time has gone where they can go and spend their way out of trouble. Because I think people who are looking at them will go, hang on, they've not finished in the top four this season. They've finished, what, 9th or 10th or whatever it's going to be. There's slightly less draws to go in and sign in for Arsenal now. I'm honestly surprised they got Thomas Partey last summer, because I thought he could have gone pretty much anywhere, and he's came in. I sent a tweet the other day that said he looks more like Frimpong than Thomas Partey, because he's not the same player that left Atletico. But I think if you're looking at ways to build your future, why not look to youth? There seems to be like a lot of young players at Arsenal and a lot of really old players, like not too many sort of in the prime in the first team. They either tend to be young or old, like Aubameyang, Lacazette, Willian, David Luiz, they're all the wrong side of 30. Xhaka even, I think Xhaka's 30 as well. So you're looking at that and thinking there's quite an imbalance there. So do you want to bring through some younger players and hang your hat on them for a couple of seasons and see how it goes? But that's a big decision that Arsenal have got to face, because if you do trust them and they don't quite hit the heights, you've got to accept a couple of seasons at least, maybe outside the top six, and let them flourish, let them progress, let them get experience, and then go for the top four and the top six in a couple of years' time, because everybody else is coming up pretty strong. I think Everton are spending loads of money. Leicester have cemented themselves in the top four. Spurs will come again. Leeds might do good things in the summer again. Bielsa's got more pull at the minute than a lot of managers, so it's a tough one for Arsenal. They've got to get it right, and it could go sour and it could go really well. It depends how they manage this whole sort of situation.
My impression of what Arsenal fans want at the moment is they kind of want a plan, they want a structure, and I think they'd probably be reasonably accepting if the club said, look, we're not going to challenge for the top four for the next four seasons. Our plan is going to be to develop youth to bring it through. I think they probably, there's at least a portion of the Arsenal fans that would get on board with that, because I think when you talk about young players, they tend to be given a little bit more time and a little bit more space to develop and slightly less expectations as well. So it could be a good blueprint for Arsenal, but it'll be interesting to see whether that is the route they take. In terms of big players that have come in and not performed, I think previously you could have put Nicolas Pepe into that, into that category, Imran, but last night he scored an absolute rocket, and in the last few weeks he started to look like a bit of a better player, hasn't he?
But isn't that all about the fee though? I think if Pepe came in for what, 30 million, 25 million, I don't think he would get half the stick that he gets. I mean, the fee is not his fault ultimately, it is Arsenal's fault, and obviously there was that inquiry about why they spent that much money on him. But yeah, he's a bit of a frustrating player, I guess. Sometimes turns it on, sometimes doesn't. But when he does turn it on, like yesterday, I mean, that's a hell of a strike. One of the goals of the weekend. And yeah, when he turns on, he can be a fantastic player. And you'd hope, like, he can find some consistency, get better. I mean, he's quite young still, so it's not like he can't find that within him to become consistent for Arsenal. But yeah, I think, like, if he was 30 million, I think Arsenal fans would be fairly happy. I guess it's just the mismanagement of funds that will always bug them. So yeah, I think him, Saka, there's some decent players there. I mean, Saka's fabulous. Saka's an absolutely fabulous player. I think they've got some players dotted around who you'd think could form the base of a decent team. I guess it's just filling in those gaps.
And what about European football, Imran? I mean, they still mathematically are in with a chance of Europa League football. You think it's too far off?
I think the most staunch Arsenal fan will admit that I think Europe's gone for them this season, which might not be a bad thing. Like, how many seasons in a row do you want to just be in the Europa League? Maybe a season out of the Europa League, concentrate on your league form, concentrate on some of the domestic cups maybe, get back up there. I think Europa League can be a distraction, depending on how it's managed. And yeah, plus, do Arsenal fans really just want to have a Europa League campaign and get knocked out in the semi-final or the final again? Probably not. So it will, like Marley said, impact on them attracting players perhaps. But then they are Arsenal. They still have that name. They still have that stadium. They still have some big names there. So I don't think that's too much a problem. Plus, with the Premiership money and alert, I still think they can get some decent players in.
Well, with West Brom gone from the Premier League and Sheffield United out already, it leaves one relegation spot still to be decided. It could be decided tonight with Fulham versus Burnley, and we'll talk about that next on Football Social Daily. Welcome back to Football Social Daily. It's another scintillating night of Monday night football. It's Fulham versus Burnley tonight. It could be a relegation decider. It looks like it is going to be a relegation
one
decider.
One for the purists.
Yeah. I mean, does Fulham have any chance of survival now, Marley? Lose tonight and it's done, because Burnley are their closest team. I think it's 9 points difference. It looks so unlikely they can pull off a great escape, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. You know, I mean, what was it? 6 weeks ago, they were showing real sort of improvement, and they were going into games, and you're thinking they're going to be hard to beat, and they've just gone backwards. It's like, it's almost like you thought they were going forwards and about to sort of really hit their form, and they seem to have gone backwards and been a lot easier to beat in the 5 weeks previous. They lost four of the last five games, I think. You can't lose four of the last five and then say, well, we'll win our last three, hopefully. You know, we'll win our last three games and we'll stay up by the skin of our teeth. Because, you know, Burnley, who did Burnley whack the other week? Was it Wolves? 4-0. You know what I mean? Like, Burnley aren't in bad form. Southampton are down there as well, but Southampton are 10 points ahead of Fulham. So with four games to go and you need a minimum of 9 points, it's up every but one nail in the coffin, I think. And you see Newcastle improving, obviously, in the last 6 weeks or so. We've done pretty well to get out of there. Brighton and Southampton are down there, but even Brighton are winning the odd game. You know, they're not that bad in terms of they're not that easy to beat, really. And Southampton are in free fall, but it came slightly too late for them, I think. And Burnley are the ones everyone would say you would fancy beating Burnley any game of the week, any week of the season, really, because they do the same thing every week. But they've got that experience and that grit, and they'll make you fight and they'll make you work for everything. And that's a credit to Sean Dyche, to be honest. But he's gonna make them hard to beat, and you've got to go and do that. And when you've lost four of your last five, you know, where's the confidence gonna come from? I'm not sure. Burnley know what's at stake as well. Burnley know they don't. If they lose this game, then it gets a bit, you know, a bit of a squeaky bum time sort of thing. So Burnley will go into this thinking we best not lose this game, because that'll pretty much relegate Fulham, and it'll be back to the Championship after spending another 100-odd million on failed players, basically.
It's a little bit strange that Scott Parker's reputation seems to have gone up in a season where Fulham are going back down, because it's quite unique that a manager gets relegated, Imran, and yet still gets linked with a team. I've seen his name linked as one of the favourites to take over the Spurs job.
Really?
What? Yeah. I mean, why is Scott Parker?
That's unbelievable.
It is a little bit unbelievable, and it won't happen. So it is completely unbelievable. But he's certainly in the mix, and I think Scott Parker is being held in quite high regard as a new up and coming manager. How has he impressed at Fulham? In what way has he managed himself this season that has done him favours?
I guess there was that period where he made them quite solid at the back. There was, I think they went on a bit of a run where they weren't conceding too many. There was that. Seemed like to get them got them organised a bit. I also think what works in his favour, obviously he's English. That works in his favour. He is young. So young managers obviously get that leeway. They are getting experience. They are getting better. And he's not Frank Lampard. I think that kind of helped him a bit as well. I feel like managers who can set their teams up to be a bit hard to beat will always get a lot more credit than managers who will go for it but then end up losing 3-2 or whatever. And it's like, oh, he can't set up a defence. And that seems to really hang around the neck. Whereas Scott Parker, I think he, through the season and through Fulham not doing too bad at the back, kind of has established that maybe he can set up a team. They're the only things I can think of. It's still too, I mean, he's still a young manager. And plus, he did get them promoted as well. That also works in his favour, whereas Lampard obviously didn't get Derby promoted. Maybe that counted against him, but Fulham did get promoted last season under Scott Parker. And if they go down, you'd think he's done it before. Maybe he can do it again. They're the only reasons I can think of, really.
Why hasn't it worked for Fulham then, Marley? They've got a manager. They've got some decent players. They've bought well in the loan market. Like you say, they managed to shore up their defence when early on in the season it looked like a real weakness for them. So why hasn't it been quite enough this year? But probably. I mean, we're assuming they're going to lose tonight and go down.
I'm not sure. They've got talent in that squad, I think. I've seen worse teams stay up, I would think, over the years. I think at the start of the season, I think they went through five or six games when they were playing a centre-back pairing of I think it was Michael Hector and Tim Ream. And I think Tim Ream has been in the Premier League for, I think he was in the Premier League when Bolton were good, you know, when they had Anelka and all them people, you know. It was, he was in that team. I think he was in the team when Hatton Ben Arfa scored that goal for Newcastle, you know, when he ripped through all the defence. And I was like, is this the same Tim Ream? And then I looked at him, he's like, you know, well into his 30s, and he was never good enough back then, so he's never going to have been good enough now. And that really hurt them at the start of the season. They had, the centre-backs were poor, and they brought in that Anderson from Lyon, and he's really, really good. He looks a proper defender, but also when you stick in a brand new, they had a brand new back four, like completely brand new. So they had to bed in, and I think that was ultimately a bit of a killer blow, because you're asking a talented back four, albeit one that has to gel, has to get used to each other, has to know what they're going to do in certain situations, and you're putting an on-loan goalkeeper behind them, and he's a great goalkeeper, Areola, but
he's been really impressive.
Also, you know, you kind of know that he's not going to be there next year, and maybe that's in the back of their heads. You know, he's not going to sign for Fulham. He's not going to leave PSG to sign for Fulham.
Is that part of the problem here, that they've got so many loan players. They've got Lookman's on loan, Madger's on loan, Loftus-Cheek is on loan, obviously the goalkeeper, as we've mentioned, on loan. So that it's very difficult to kind of build that team spirit, that togetherness, that we're in the trenches, we're battling to get out of relegation, when you've got so many loan players in one team.
Yeah, maybe. I'm looking at, you know, even Anderson, who I mentioned there, he's on loan. And if you build in loan players, sometimes you think, are they properly going to fight for the team when things get tough? And it's about the character and things like that. And, you know, you compare that to, like, compare it to Newcastle, for example. You know, if you've got Matt Ritchie and Paul Dummett and Andy Carroll, they've been around the club for years. They might not be the most talented players, but they're going to fight for you. And they're going to make you, you know, they're going to call people out when they're not putting in 100%. I mean, Matt Ritchie had a fight with the coach 6 weeks ago. And it's probably one of the best things to happen to our season, because since then we've been slightly better and pulled ourselves out of it. I don't think there's any fights going on at Fulham. I think, you know, they're almost sort of sleepwalking towards this, and they've not been able to avoid the car crash that has been their season. So you're looking at Anderson, for example. He's 24, he plays for Lyon. Lyon are historically a selling club. He's had a year in the Premier League where he's done all right. He's probably going to be thinking, someone will take a chance on me next year. And a lot of clubs will be looking at him going, he's better than a team that's going to finish 18th, so we'll take him next year, and that's his future sorted. And Fulham are probably going to have to go back to the team and count the bodies who are left when everybody goes back to the parent clubs, and then go and do it again with probably a very similar squad to what they had when they came up last season. So, you know, Mitrovic comes back in all of a sudden, Cavalero, and all these type of players will probably have a good go at getting them back up again next season, but it's just not been good enough anywhere, really. The leadership's not been good enough. The defence hasn't been good enough for the vast majority. And the transfer of business hasn't really worked again.
I think a big thing for them as well is that I think they expected a lot more from Mitrovic and Lookman to bang in the goals. And I think once that didn't happen, I think they've both got 4 goals this season each. And I think once that didn't happen, they were always going to struggle. I think they expected a lot more from Mitrovic especially. Like, I think when everyone came up, I think when Fulham came up, I think Mitrovic was a lot of people's pick to go into their fantasy team as like their cheap striker, because he thought, yeah, he's done it before, he can bang in the goals, and it just hasn't happened, has it?
Yeah, I think he got like 26 goals in the Championship last season, so you're looking at him going, he's confident, you know, he's doing good things. I think even when he went and played for Serbia in the last international break, he scored a couple of goals, and they were like brilliant goals, like brilliant finishes, and you're thinking, oh, you know, has he got something for this final 10 games? And he's just, I think Parker's decided that he'd rather go with someone else, either Cavalero or Madger. Madger scored 2 or 3 goals and done pretty much nothing else. And then Mitrovic is there on the bench, and you're almost thinking, if you play Mitrovic every week, at least he's going to smash people about. He might get sent off, but he's going to cause an absolute riot in the box, you know what I mean? He's going to put himself about, win headers, and can you play off him a little bit more? I don't know, but yeah, Parker's made that decision, and fair enough. I mean, the speculation about him being linked to Spurs, I mean, if I was a Spurs fan and I'm seeing Graham Potter and Scott Parker being linked with the manager's job, I'm going and supporting Arsenal.
I don't know. I think that's probably where Spurs are at the moment, to be honest with you. I think that's the kind of manager they should be looking at. Let's talk about Burnley quickly, because they've completed pretty much their usual season. They've just stayed up. They've played pretty unattractive football for the majority of it. They've had a couple of good wins as well. Again, Sean Dyche getting all the praise. Marley's heaped him with praise already. But are there, in reality, loads of other managers, Imran, who could do the same job as Sean Dyche? Do the players need more credit? Because ultimately, he's setting them up to be hard to beat. But that's not always the most difficult thing in the world. And again, it's like Burnley just do the same thing season after season. They make themselves hard to beat. They stay in the division.
I mean, is it the easiest thing in the world? I mean, Burnley, like you said, they have been in the division every year with a pretty underwhelming squad. It's all well and good saying, yeah, someone else might can do the same thing. But the fact is, Sean Dyche has done this. He has kept Burnley in the division more or less comfortably. I mean, what, they've got like a 9-point buffer on Fulham tonight. So, I mean, that's pretty comfortable, really. So, it's all well and good. I always think this with Burnley. It's like, oh, yeah, they could do this, they could do that. But the fact is, Sean Dyche is there and he has kept them up season after season. He is doing that, and anything else is a bit fanciful. We just don't know. And I mean, if you look at the Burnley squad, I mean, if you were walking down the street at Burnley, how many of them would you actually recognise? Probably not many. They all look the same. So just Chris Wood lumbering over you. But yeah, I think he's done a fine job. Yeah, it's not the most attractive, but he gets results, and you've got to give him credit for that ultimately, because we don't know what would happen if he wasn't there. And I think, to be honest with you, I do think if he did leave, they would struggle because of that shift, that the changeover.
Definitely.
Of such a long reign to someone else, I think they would really struggle.
I was amazed to read that Chris Wood, I mean, I wasn't amazed to read that Chris Wood was the club's highest goal scorer this season, but I was amazed to read that he is the only Burnley player who scored more than 3 goals this season, Marley, which I guess on one hand shows his value to that Burnley team, but on the other hand shows a real deficiency in either the style of play or the rest of that Burnley team.
Yeah, well, there's only one team that scored less goals, and that's Fulham, so we're in for an absolute cracker tonight. That's Burnley for you, innit? That's Burnley. They don't score many. They don't concede that many. I mean, they conceded 47 this season, which is actually more than Fulham. So, you know, it's one of them where if you play that way, it doesn't guarantee you goals. You're hoping for flick-ons, and you're hoping for your strikers to number one, beat the defender in the air if they play it long, and number two, you're hoping for it to drop to somebody, you know, like a strike partner or a centre midfielder running onto it. And ultimately, that is a formation and a style which only really gets goals from strikers. You don't see many centre midfielders bursting onto things and, you know, dribbling past people and almost, you know, like a Frank Lampard who would always arrive at the perfect time in the box and finish something off. They haven't got that midfielder who'll burst forward and score. So everything comes down to Wood and Barnes and Vidra and Jay Rodriguez as well. But, you know, ultimately you're never really gonna get too many goals. I mean, the four goals against Wolves was crazy with Chris Wood just all popping up with a hat trick and an assist as well for the other one. I was thinking, Jesus Christ, Wolves must be bad. But Burnley were great that day. Burnley were very, very good. Everything went well for them. Wolves had a bit of a soft core and Burnley went straight through them. But I think the most impressive thing about Burnley is the fact that they've spent 750 grand last summer and stayed up still. And I think Burnley are only ever going to be in trouble if and when they sell Tarkowski and possibly Pope. Because until then, they should be all right. But if they try and survive by not spending much money, as long as they keep them two, I think they're all right. But if they sell them, then it becomes about how do Burnley spend this cash? Because if they get 30 million each of them, I mean, Burnley have never had 60 million in their lives. So then I don't know if they know how to spend it. I don't know who you can attract to Burnley. I would assume it's not too much.
Million pound players.
Yeah, 60 Dale Stevenses. Yeah, so, you know, they do most of their shopping in the Championship. And that's risky because, you know, there's no guarantee about players coming in from the Championship and being able to do it in the Premier League. So we'll see what they do this summer. I think they've got the takeover done now. So maybe there's a few more funds. We'll see what they can do next season. But I'd be amazed if it was anything other than what they've done this season. They'll be 14th tops, possibly 16th, 17th, and surviving three or four games to the end of the season. It is what Burnley do.
I mean, they do have a goal scorer in Chris Wood as well. And if you've got a goal scorer, you're always going to have a chance. And I can't see Chris Wood going anywhere. I don't think anyone's going to pay whatever Burnley would want for Chris Wood, because to them, he's probably worth at least, what, 30, 40 million? And
yeah,
you're not going to get that for Chris Wood, are you? So, no one's going to go up for that for Chris Wood. But while they've got him, they've always got a chance of scoring goals and doing well. So, yeah.
Well, speaking of transfer markets and transfer values, that's where we're going next, because, as I said, we're reaching the end of the season. The transfer window is hotting up. We're going to look at some of the rumours going around in the back pages of the papers next on Football Social Daily. Welcome back. Final bit of Football Social Daily and a wee bit of transfer chat. A few interesting stories doing the rounds on the back pages of the papers. As always, we're going to try and wrap up some of the best. I'm going to start with your team, Imran, because Manchester United apparently want to tempt Edinson Cavani into staying at Old Trafford for another year. There's been loads of rumours suggesting he's not happy and he does want to leave, but United desperate to keep him, going to offer him a massive pay rise to do so. If he does go, is he going to be really tough for United to replace, to have that focal point, or have they got enough strength not to worry about it too much?
It would be a massive worry if he went, because you've only got Greenwood, who, yes, he's very, very good, but he is still young and learning. And then there's Martial, who, I mean, Martial is Anthony Martial. He's either very good or absolutely anonymous. So we've got Cavani now, and we know what it can be like with a striker like that, with that movement, with that energy, with that finishing. And it would be really difficult to go to a season now without him, I guess, or without a player like that. Personally, I would be very surprised if he doesn't stay, because, I mean, those quotes, I think they came from his dad around January, and at the time he wasn't in the side. I think he just had that ban for the racism and, well, quote unquote racism.
Yeah.
Let's not go into that. And I think he just had an injury as well, and he was a bit in and out, and I could see why at the time he'd think, yeah, I don't really fancy this, but you can see how he's playing now, how happy he looks.
The fans seem to absolutely love him as well, don't they?
Oh, yeah. I mean, United fans will always love a goal scorer and always love someone who tries that, and he does both. And he seems to really just love scoring goals, and he seems to be getting on well with all our teams. He's built up a great understanding with Bruno Fernandes and Paul Pogba already, so that's something else as well. I'll be shocked if he doesn't stick around, because I think 3 months is a long time in football, and I think things have changed dramatically for him. I think he'll want one more season. And all he keeps talking about, oh, you know, he want to play in front of the fans, in front of a big Old Trafford. I think he's probably overselling that a little bit, but it's still a thing. You know, you want to probably play in front of a packed out Old Trafford and score a goal and celebrate with the fans. So that'll probably maybe play on his mind as well. But yeah, I can see a bit of a pay rise, a bit of a promise that you are our number nine now. I don't think Martial gets in ahead of him at number nine at all, to be honest with you. I guess the only issue with Cavani is the injuries, and he gets niggles here and there. And when he does get a niggle, it might take him a couple of games to get back up to speed. But I think if Ollie plans for that, he is the one to keep, and I'm sure we will.
It's interesting you mention Antonio Martial, because there's another transfer rumour. Again, we're talking about Jadon Sancho potentially coming to Manchester United. £80 million, according to the Star, is what United are willing to pay Borussia Dortmund for the England winger. I mean, What does that mean for the likes of Anthony Martial, Marley? Firstly, is this transfer going to happen? We spent the whole of last summer, I think a little bit of the January transfer window before that, certainly spent a lot of this January transfer window talking about Jadon Sancho's potential move to Manchester. So it looks like we're going through that again. Is it going to happen? Is it just paper talk? And if it does happen, does that mean the likes of Anthony Martial potentially moving on from United?
I think, well, you know, if you do want to make it happen, the best financial way to do it is to sell Martial and see if anybody wants Martial first, and then if they are, try and get 40 million for him maybe, and then you half the cost of Sancho, and it makes financially a lot of sense. But I think Man United do need a right-sided player. I think Sancho's the perfect one. He's got age, he's got talent, he's got everything on his side. So it seems like an open goal if he's there for sale. I think he should. He's not been at his best this season. I think he's had a couple of injuries and he's not been quite as good as he was last season. That's probably helped him. It's probably drove his price down slightly. I think they were talking 100 and odd million for him last year, and it's 80 this season. So realistically, that's only ever, that might go up next year, you know, with the inflation, him coming off the back of the Euros, he might have a great Euros. If you can get this done this summer before the Euros, then I think you're laughing if you're a Man United fan or you're your Man United board member who's in charge of going and signing him, because it seems like it's like an open thing. I think he seems to be open to the move. Man United seems to be not looking at too many other players. So let's see what they can do this summer, because they've had the board upheaval. You know, everyone's angry at the board. I think this would go, it wouldn't solve the issue, obviously, but it would certainly put Man United fans in a good mood coming into next season if they can do good business this summer and tie Cavani down for another year, buy Sancho, and then maybe buy another couple of other squad players as well to improve the squad, because Chelsea are coming strong next season, Man City are coming strong, and then Man United have got to keep up with them, I think.
Do you think that's where United should be spending their money, Imran, on an £80 million winger, when you're fairly well stocked in that kind of part of the pitch? Is that where you want to see investment? Because, I mean, who knows how much money the Glazers are going to release to spend on that playing squad. But if you're putting a load of money into Cavani's contract, you're paying £80 million for Jadon Sancho, that's not going to leave a whole load of cash for maybe buying in another centre-back, for example.
Personally, I mean, I think if you ask the majority of United fans, I think a lot of them do want Sancho. Personally, I wouldn't mind looking at alternative options of a right winger who's maybe half the price and, you know, doing a bit of scouting, whatever. But it does seem like it's Sancho or nothing for United, especially after last season's chase. Like, it was barely a talk of any other buddy but Sancho. So I can only see that happening, really. I can only see United going in for him again and that being that. I do think, especially after all this ESL stuff and the Glazers and the protests, I do think there'll be maybe a bit more money to spend than there might maybe would have been if this hadn't happened. I do think we do need a right winger, because our best right winger is Greenwood, and it's arguable whether that's his best position. I personally think he's very good at the right wing, but a lot of people think he should be up front. And then our second best right winger is Rashford, and he is a shadow of himself compared to when he is on the left. So if you take that into consideration, we have to get a right winger. And for the club, it seems to only be Sancho. I would like to see us buy a centre-back. I don't think that'll happen. I'd like to see us buy a defensive midfielder. I think that probably will happen, or someone in that midfield. But yeah, I think I can see it being Sancho as the right winger, and then maybe one or two other players, maybe a fullback to help compete with Wan-Bissaka. Not compete with him necessarily, just the Telles version of a right back, basically. And that'll be that, I think, for the window. A centre back is a possibility, especially Lindelof made a bit of a mistake again on the weekend, and he's got that in him. But I do think Ole does like his Maguire-Lindelof partnership, and I don't think that's on his top priority list. I do think Sancho's at the top of the priority list, and that'll happen. Whether or not that's a good idea, we'll only see. You'd hope that he'd do really well. He's an assist machine and a goal machine. Maybe not so much this season, but in general, he gives you that. So, yeah, I would see that being what's going to happen.
We're going to move on from Manchester United now, but if you're a Manchester United fan,
if
you want more from the Red Half of Manchester, then you can check out Imran on the United Hour podcast. It is a Manchester United focused show. You can find it on the Sports Social Podcast Network. Just search Sports Social Podcast Network. You can find the United Hour on the website, along with a load of other podcasts as well. We're going to move on to a Brighton and Hove Albion player whose name I'm sure I'll probably get wrong, because I get everyone's name wrong. Yves Bissouma, I'm going for this one.
Oh, perfect.
Is that a good one? Wow, gold star
for one.
Jim.
Well, it's definitely not Yves.
I'll tell you what, if you throw enough mud, something will stick.
He wants to leave Brighton, apparently. He's 24. He's had a decent season on the South Coast, attracting a lot of interest from Manchester City, from Liverpool, from Arsenal, Marseille apparently interested as well. This is according to the Times. Is he good enough to play for these big, quite weighty names, Marley?
It seems so. I think he's been linked pretty much all season, which is, you know, put a lot of spotlight on him, a lot of eyes on him, and I think he is probably the best player Brighton have got. If we're being honest, I think Brighton are I don't know. Brighton annoy me because I think they get a lot of praise for a team that's won 8 games all season. They get a lot of, oh, they're a really good team, but they're 15th, and they finished 15th last season, they finished 15th the year before, so I don't know really what the big fuss is about Brighton. But Bissouma is one of the players where you look at him, you go, I think he could comfortably play for a top 6, top 8 club. Yeah, there seems to be a fair bit of interest in him, and I think even if Brighton do absolutely amazing next season, where are they going to finish? 10th, maybe? 9th, possibly? I don't know. Not massively ambitious as a club, I don't think. So if it comes to, you know, Liverpool, for example, coming in and saying, do you want to come in and be our new centre midfielder because we're letting Wijnaldum go, we might let Keita go. You're saying to Brighton, sorry, I don't think you can stand in my way here. And absolutely fine. He's combative. He's a good passer. He's got loads of energy in the middle. He's almost like a bit like Kante in terms of his sort of the way he sort of covers ground and things like that. He's always pressing. He's always playing. I think Brighton's style as well helps him go to a top club, because even though they don't get the results, they do play decent enough football. So that helps you if you're going to go to a Liverpool or even a Man City, for example, or even a Spurs, depending on who's the manager next season. So we'll see who's really interested in him, but I think he's probably available for a decent fee in the market. He's a good age, he's got good attributes. I think his ceiling is higher than Brighton. And I don't think Brighton could be too annoyed that they lose him, because when you get a good player and you finish in 15th every year, you tend to lose him.
I guess that's got to be part of the business model at Brighton, hasn't it, Imran, from the point of view of you're not going to hang on to these players if they feel like they've outgrown the club. And when you've got the likes of Manchester City, Liverpool and Arsenal knocking on your door, you know you can charge a premium. So you do let them go and you reinvest that money into your playing squad.
Yeah, I think that's what you have to expect if you're a Brighton fan and at the club. Like, if you can get 40 million for a player and you can invest that in, what, 2 or 3 other players, and that's only going to do you well. I think Brighton would love a striker in the summer, so I think any funds that can go towards that, they'll be all over. So yeah, I think Bissouma's a decent player. It's time to cash in on him, especially after the season he's had, after the season Brighton have had as well. It's definitely time to cash in and use that funds elsewhere in the team.
If whatever money you get for Bissouma, every penny of it should go on a striker. Because if you go through another season Neil Maupay missing chance after chance after chance, getting in arguments with everybody. He could start a fight in an empty room, that guy.
What about Danny Welbeck?
Danny Welbeck's great for the 90 minutes he plays a season before his calf goes. But yeah, Maupay, honestly, I think as regular strikers go, I think he's the worst in the Premier League, Maupay. For the chances he gets and the goals he scores, it is baffling how many chances he misses.
Maybe Brighton will spend 40 million on Chris Wood. Just reinvent themselves, become a long ball team. Well,
that's not a bad shout, to be fair.
Let's finish off with a rumour for Leicester City. They are interested in Lille's French midfielder. Let me see if I can go 2 for 2 with player pronunciation. Boubacary Soumaré. How's that?
Yeah. 5 out of 10.
Yeah.
Okay.
Boubacary Soumaré.
Oh God. All right, I butchered it then. Anyway, they're interested in him. Everton, Wolves, Aston Villa, all interested in the 22-year-old as well, who's been a target for AC Milan for a while, but Meccano in France saying that Leicester City are interested. I always get this kind of like feeling that when Leicester City are interested in a player, because they have this habit of uncovering stars, I always get the feeling he's going to be decent, Imran. Do you think this could be another potential special player that they've uncovered on the continent?
It's funny you should say that. I had the exact same reaction. Someone asked, we were talking about him on our podcast, and I had to pretend like I knew who he was. To be honest with you, I had very, basically no knowledge of him at all. Someone else had, and they said he's actually a very good player. He's like had a decent season. And at that point, you're just thinking, well, we need to get on in him because Leicester are in on him. Then, yeah, we need to be on that. You can't really knock their transfer record. So it is, you'd think, a good purchase, but it's really hard to speak with any authority because I just haven't seen him play very much at all. But in Leicester are in for him, then something must, there must be something good about him. I'd be surprised. I mean, maybe it could be a flop. Who knows? Maybe it's time for Leicester to have a flop. Everyone else has them. Maybe Leicester should. I thought they had a flop with Iheanacho, but then you know what? He just goes scored about 15 goals, so he's not a flop anymore. So I think it's only right that footballing gods give us a Leicester flop.
Is it a player you've got any knowledge of, Marley? I mean, the one thing that I look at with caution is the other Premier League teams that are interested in him, in Everton, Wolves and Aston Villa. And some of them, then I'm going, maybe he's not that good at all. But the Daily Record are also suggesting that Manchester United are interested. So, I mean, who knows? Is it a player you've got any knowledge of or any insight on at all?
Yeah, because Newcastle were linked with him last summer. And apparently we've put in a £35 million bid for him. And he said no because he looked at Newcastle and gone, oh, you're rubbish.
So we know he's sensible. Yeah, that's the thing. We know.
He's got a brain. That's what we can decipher from that situation. So, yeah, we ended up with Jeff Hendrick instead. So that tells you where...
trading upwards.
Yeah, that tells you where we are. But, yeah, he's one of them sort of standout players in France. They tend to burst onto the scene. You've seen it with the striker... West Ham were linked with, is it Boulay Dia, scored a few goals this season and he was linked, and then you see Samara doing it for the last couple of years. The one thing I do know is that he plays for Lille, and Lille are 3 points away from winning the title in France. So is now the right time to buy him in terms of, you know, he's going to be in the Champions League next season. They've toppled PSG. It's then a case of what are Lille, because you see sometimes teams get to the top and think, that's it. That's as good as it's going to get. You've seen it with Leicester in 2016. Mahrez left, Kante left. You see, it might happen with Lille as well. So Samari might be going, well, this is as good as it's ever going to get at Lille. And let's take the next step and play in the Champions League with Leicester, for example. But he's, in terms of the way he plays, he's like a very similar to Bissouma, as I've just been saying. He's defensive mid, but he's sort of box to box. He's very combative. He's massive. I think he's about 6'3". So he covers ground. He's decent passer. He's almost like, he'd probably sit alongside Ndidi in midfield and be a slightly better on the ball version of Ndidi, but maybe not quite as good defensively. But
then what would that mean for Tielemans? I mean, I think Tielemans is a fabulous player. That's one thing I don't get about this is, why would you spend that much money on a defensive midfielder when you've got, Leicester arguably have one of the better centre midfield pairings around in Ndidi and Tielemans. So I don't really get it.
But Leicester City getting to a place now where they need two players for every position. They need to be in that kind of thing. They need to be able to combat, to compete in the Champions League. They need to be combating the Premier League. They need to have a good cup runs because their status is increasing to that level.
Yeah, or are they preparing to sell Ndidi?
That's what I was about to say. If they sign Samare, are they open to selling Ndidi? And if Man United need a defensive midfielder, I think he's the best in the league. Him and Declan Rice, I'd say, are the two standout best defensive mids in the league, in my opinion. So Could you not sort of tempt Leicester into selling him? If you say, we'll give you £50 million for Ndidi, that pays for Samare, you know, and then you've got £20 million left in the bank, maybe, if you get the funds right. So it's an interesting one, but we don't know what Rodgers is planning. If you're thinking of getting all three of them three in the same midfield, you may be looking at a 4-3-3 next season. You may be looking at a diamond with Maddison at the tip of it and Vardy and Iheanacho up front all next season and no wingers. But then where does that leave Harvey Barnes? So maybe it is a depth thing, and thinking maybe they're thinking we can have him at a decent price and add depth as instead of him being in the team every week, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it makes sense. Especially if they're going for the Champions League, which you'd hope if you're a Leicester fan, they don't end up bottling. We'll see. But they will need that strength and depth. And when Ndidi, it was missing, I think, for a period of the season, they really did miss him when they went through that injury crisis a couple of months ago. But yeah, I personally would be very, very happy if Man United decided to buy Wilfred Ndidi. That would be fantastic. I'm sure Leicester fans would not like that so much. But yeah, I think if they are in the Champions League next season, oh, well, they'll definitely be in Europe, you'd thought. So they will need that squad depth. So yeah, maybe it is that. Maybe it is a quote-unquote budget option. 35, 40 million is not really budget, but in today's market, you know, it's about what you pay for a decent player. So yeah, maybe it's just that.
It's only the tip of the transfer rumour iceberg, of course. There'll be plenty more of that to come over the summer, particularly with the Euros, as certain unknown European players pop onto managers' radars, and we'll keep you abreast of all of it on Football Social Daily. Thank you very much for today's podcast. Cheers, Marley.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.
Cheers, Imran. If people obviously can find the United Hour on the podcast network website, as I said, if they want to find you on social media, etc., where can they check you out?
It's just United_Hour on Twitter and United Hour on Instagram. Just search for it. You'll find us.
Sorted. Right, that is it for Football Social Daily. We have a brand new episode for you tomorrow. We'll have all the reaction to Fulham versus Burnley, which I'm sure you can't wait to hear. Plus, there'll be a look ahead.
There'll be a 4-3 thriller, I'm telling you now.
There's got to be a full podcast on that.
Yeah, full 1 hour on that, and then we'll do another podcast looking ahead to the other Premier League games, because there are Premier League games all this week as well. It is non-stop. We'll see you next time on Football Social Daily.